All right, welcome to the O of X podcast. I'm Dave Claxton. This episode is brought to you by Duonamic, and along with me, as always, is my forgiving female friend, Bethany McChesney. We'll explain that later, I guess. Where do you want to start? You want to start with your running? Because you were all excited about running.
Oh, what happened this weekend in the running world?
Yes, the running world.
We can start there if you like.
Yes.
Yeah, so for all of my running friends, track and road, this weekend was a big weekend. It was the Berlin Marathon, which if you follow the road racing scene, Berlin is traditionally a very, very fast marathon. A lot of world records have been set there. I have some marathon friends who say it's more like running a 36K instead of a 42. It's just such a fast course.
That's massive.
Yeah, so our Canadian record on the women's side was set there last year by Natasha Wodak. 23:14, so 2:23:14, something like that low. So it's a fast course. And there was a lot of hype this year because they were saying it was potentially going to be Eliud Kipchoge's potentially his last opportunity to run a sub two. He's 38. They're saying, you know, only so many years left. So there was a lot of hype around that. And so we ended up running a 2:02. Last year he was 2:01, so he's always kind of knocking on that door. Hasn't quite done it yet, but he is. I think this is 5 years in a row he's won Berlin, which is a pretty big deal. But the big news story coming out of Berlin this year was the women's world record was smashed by over 2 minutes. So a woman ran 2:11:52. I'm just double checking to make sure. Sorry, 2:11:53. So no woman has previously gone under 2:14. So in 2019, the world record for women was run in Chicago. So when I don't know if you remember when Paula Radcliffe ran a 2:15 at the London Marathon. I was in high school when this happened. I remember being in phys ed class and hearing about it. It was such a big deal. And she broke the record by like 5 minutes, and it hadn't been touched in like 25 years. And that was like the, how everyone was, I don't know how Paula Radcliffe did this. And it was just, it felt untouchable. And now all of a sudden women are running a 2:11. It almost qualifies her for the men's Olympics. So anyways, her name is Tejaste Asafa, and it was her third marathon. Her first one was last year in Berlin. So she has a back-to-back winner in Berlin. She's only 28. And then, so when I see numbers like this drop, I'm like, oh boy, what did she do?
Whoa. So there's been big advancements in shoes.
So here's the story.
Okay.
Adidas dropped a pair of shoes 2 weeks ago. They're called the Adizero Adios Pro Evo 1. They are claiming to be the fastest and lightest super shoe ever designed. They dropped 2 weeks before the Berlin Marathon. They are 100 grams lighter than the Alpha Flies, which came out when Eliud Kipchoge was in the Breaking 2 marathon project. Yeah. So these shoes, I was reading about them a little bit today. They have the big stack, like the Alpha Flies, but there's a 4 foot rocker. So these propulsion plate shoes, if you've ever run them, it makes a big difference, but these have a 4 foot rocker. They've taken out the liner of them. So they're the super, it's like this thin translucent shoe. There's no liner, so there's no sock liner that we're used to take some of the weight off. And then the bottom of it, so this is where they're saving the weight of the shoe, is this rubber on the bottom that's supposed to be the lightest rubber ever designed. And it's completely flat, so there's no grooves on the bottom of the shoe, which is also really weird looking. But they've claimed too that they've done all this testing and it's still as grippy as if there were grooves on the bottom, because it kind of looks like you would just slide if it was raining at all.
I was just thinking that. Yeah.
But they claim that the rubber still has grip. But here's the kicker with these shoes. Well, two things. First of all, these shoes, they come with a little slip of paper, a piece of paper on the inside that says these shoes are a one-time use only.
Oh shit.
Yeah.
And what are they, probably
so
400 bucks?
No.
Okay.
Keep going.
Oh shit.
Uh-huh. They're
They'll
also
sell.
the most expensive pair of super shoes on the market. So they go for about 400 euros. So $575 Canadian, one time use. So that's what they say. They're one, it's a card. Sorry, it comes with a card that says one race. So one race, so a marathon plus a familiarization period is all that they're designed to be able to handle.
So many questions.
And then the other interesting thing. So in order for a marathon to be, or a, sorry, a world record to be considered legal, everything that an elite has or uses has to be available to the public. So when the Alpha Flies came out for the Breaking 2 project, it wasn't a legal world record because none of this was available to the public, including his shoes, and the shoes weren't legal at the time. So Adidas released these shoes 2 weeks before, but they released 521 pairs to the public.
So I've actually seen the same kind of chicanery with cars. So they'll have like a sports car racing, and your car has to be, you know, a production car. So to make it a production car, they'll just make 200 of them and price them at a ludicrous amount that no one will buy them. But
yeah,
they're still a production car. And it seems like the same kind of logic.
Yeah.
But that said, you've lots of questions in my head that you brought. Number one, flat surface on the bottom. Great. I get it. Okay, I understand. I see where they're going with it. But if the goal was to get it even lighter, why not put grooves in it? Because every groove you put in is more space you're taking away, which should theoretically save weight. And in classic way, add traction, should it possibly be a puddle, you know, something like that. So I mean, I look at that and I think that, but marketing genius. Now they just took a complete home run swing and nailed it, like, because this woman went out and performed so well in them. They could cost $7,000 and be good for 3 hours and people will buy them.
Well, and that's the thing. Like when Nike came out with the Vaporflies and the Alphaflies, they, and when they were the very first propulsion plate shoe when they were first legal, everybody I knew just that they just had to buy them, and their shelf life is not long either. It's like a couple hundred kilometers. Like you might get a few marathons, maybe at best, and then some training runs. And I mean, they were still at the time $350, $400, but everybody had them. Like you just, and so now with these, the Adizero Adios, $600, but a woman just ran a 2:11 marathon. Everyone's going to buy them.
I think if anything, they have priced them too low.
Yeah.
But it's because it is a limited market, right? I'm not going to buy them. Most people aren't going to buy them.
Yeah.
Anybody who's either got a lot of disposable cash or who's really concerned about their marathon time, which often could be the same people, they're going to go for it. And until someone builds something that beats it,
and now it's the race for all the companies to catch up. So to steal the technology. And that's what happened with the Nike, with their first propulsion plates, is every other company had, as fast as they could, had to create a comparable shoe. And when you think about sponsored athletes, so if you're an Adidas sponsored athlete and Nike comes out with this shoe that's legal and it has a significant advantage, you're not going to want to wear your Adidas shoes lining up beside the Nike Vaporflies or Alphaflies, and you have like a notable disadvantage. So then what was happening at the time was then sponsored athletes were just spray painting. They were getting the Nike shoes, spray painting them so that you couldn't see the logo on camera.
Wouldn't that add
and
weight?
Wearing them anyways. What's that?
Wouldn't that add weight?
Spray paint?
Yeah.
No.
We're talking about 100 grams. I mean, come on.
You're right. Yeah. Yeah. So now basically other companies kind of have to what did Adidas do? And then they kind of have to go jump ship and figure out what it was. But yeah, I don't, this single use thing though, this is just the wrong direction.
Yeah, yeah. But it does go back. And again, I use the car metaphor they used to have in racing. Win on Sunday, sell on Monday. And that's what the shoes are doing. They're like,
so check eBay the Monday after major marathons.
Yeah. Yeah. They'll be selling, right? Gotta get rid of my Vaporflies because they came second place. I need these Adidas death shoes. By the way, who named that? Like, really, that's too much. That name is, I mean, obviously, it is. Like,
Adidas
is German, evil. So.
I know.
So it makes sense. There's a logic to that, but that's a lot. Like, it does make me laugh when you say, oh, 100 grams and all that stuff and how light they are. And then you think about OCR shoes, and people sometimes worry about the weight of OCR shoes, but then you get 6 pounds of mud stuck to them and you're concerned about the 100 grams in the shoe. Anyway.
But the VJs are actually quite light. So I was looking up today. So the VJ Max is 286 grams. The Alpha Flies are 230 grams.
Yeah, but the VJs, you get 60 pounds of mud stuck to them. Who cares what they weigh?
I know.
Right? Like, the only feature about that I ever cared about was actual drainage. Because then you get the water in them, you need to get the water out. But
yeah.
I don't know. That's really interesting, though. That's cool stuff. And it's, I like tech. Tech is neat. It's good. It's fun. But
But like, to what point though is this just becoming too much?
I don't know. The question for me is, yes, she won, but she was also very good to begin with. And I mean, it's not like you're going to buy these shoes, and if you're, you know, a 3-hour marathoner, you're all of a sudden going to run a 2:30. It doesn't work like that, you know. Mm-hmm. But maybe yeah. Give you that extra 1%, that extra 2%, you know? And I don't know. I mean, I have a pair of super shoes.
Yeah.
Now, they weren't that expensive, and I've probably exceeded their shelf life. But that said, when you exceed the shoe's shelf life, it doesn't explode like a Mission Impossible message. There's no self-destruct on it. It doesn't just
right.
go, boom, you've reached 200 miles, boom.
Yeah.
They still work. Mm-hmm. But I will say, it's, I find, you know, I have the Ultra One and I find it's been fantastic. It feels so much better.
Yeah.
Am I faster in it? I don't know, but it feels better.
It's one of those things though, where it's like, if you don't have them and you're in a road race, you're just at a disadvantage. It's like, you just can't not run in a propulsion plate too. And that's where I don't know. It's like, you have to have the gear.
Yeah.
And that's where, like, I've always been such a purist when it comes to running. It's like, you know, anybody can do it. But if you want to do it well, you just have to have propulsion plate shoes now. And it was just never like that before. Like, the shoes that I used to race roads in were just, they're almost nothing. Like socks with some rubber on the bottom. And even in the track, like, they have plates now and track spikes too. And it's like, you can't not race with the technology. And for running, it was such a pure sport, and now it's like, they just found a way to make technology a part of it. And I don't know, but then, you know, GPS watches and stuff, like, I love that too. I use that. Am I faster from it? No. Like, my watch doesn't, but I get more training data.
Your training should be better, right? Your training should be more accurate, to be able to be more dialed in. Same with you know, when you talk about the tracks, right? Tracks are more advanced. The construction of the tracks themselves, the building material of the track itself is faster than it used to be.
Reducing. Yeah. Well, I mean, if Emma Cook Clark runs in like a Casio digital, not GPS watch. So
By the way, Casios are like really cool now. I got guys at work that wear like these retro Casios.
Yeah, that's what she runs in.
I'm like, it's awesome. 21 dude's got a calculator watch from Timex. It's awesome.
Oh, that's awesome.
I want the calculator watch.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I don't know. Sometimes I think about just throwing away all the technology and running by feel, but I don't think I could do it.
Yeah, I don't know. It's fun. The tech is fun. I mean, just be glad it's not, you know, like hockey or whatever. Like, how bad? Like, oh my god, the goalie equipment differences that I went through in my stages. Like, my first pair of pads, when they got wet, weighed 50-60 pounds a piece because they just would soak up in that leather, and then. By the time I had my last pair, they were, you know, you could just lift them like a finger. They felt like a shoe. They were so light.
Yeah.
And into Reebok air pump skates, and tech comes, it just happens.
I know, it is just part of it. I know.
Okay, and that, and but what amazes me though is, like you say, like you see that record last forever and ever and ever, and then it's not beat it by a couple seconds, it's obliterated.
Yeah, smashed. Like,
and
no
now,
woman had run under 214, and now all of a sudden we see 211.
So how many more major marathons are there, like, say, this year?
We have Chicago.
Chicago.
And then New York is in November.
Okay. So I bet you another woman breaks the old record.
You think so?
Yeah. Because that's what happens, right? Someone does it, and then the floodgates open.
Yeah.
They might not break the new record, but they'll break that old one, right? Just like that whole 4-minute mile deal, right? That was Roger Bannister or whatever. Nobody could beat it. Nobody could beat it. Somebody
and
beats
then
it.
60 guys did it right after.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I think that'll be it. The floodgates will open wide. And especially because now they'll all run out and get those same shoes. Or Adidas will give them those shoes. And then.
Right. Exactly.
And then people like
they don't really
Bracken Crocker will buy them.
Yeah. Well, now it's like, well, what if Kipchoge had these shoes?
I don't know.
Would he have gone under two?
Probably.
Probably not.
What if Bobby Orr had a composite stick?
Okay, yeah.
These things happen. Anyway, it is what it is. It's a hell of an amazing record. Like, that's.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
The gravity of how fast that is.
So do you want me to give you some numbers here?
Yes, numbers are fun.
So she's running 15:30s for 5K.
Mm-hmm. So 15:35K, except she's running 42K.
So, yeah, I mean, her 5K split. So if you break it down, her 5Ks are averaging a 15:30. So she's running, so 3:08 per kilometer.
Yeah, for 42 kilometers.
Yeah.
I can't run a single 3:08.
Kipchoge is running, so his fastest 5K was 14:12. His slowest 5K was 14:56.
That's just nuts. So the, and that's so that's probably what that's pro, that's a sub 3 kilometer. Again,
he ran. I guess he ran 1 kilometer in a 3:03. It was like his 39th kilometer. It was like when he knew he didn't have the record and he slowed down by like a couple seconds. So he never only 1 kilometer of 42 is slower than the 3 minute kilometer.
They had at some like running show or something. I saw it on social media somewhere. They'd set up a treadmill that was constantly rolling at his marathon pace, and you were able to get on it and see how long you could keep up the pace. And most people couldn't even get going, you know?
No, it's
falling
it's
over trying to start.
Remarkable. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I think at that pace, I'm trying to think, I don't know, like, could I make 400 meters maybe? I don't know. Like, it'd be pretty close. I think, like, I don't know. It's pretty fast. I know that.
It is fast. So, and also noteworthy, I like to shout out our Canadians. So, Melindy Elmore went. Melindy Elmore is a really amazing Canadian female. In 2006, she went to the Olympics in the 1500. She was like one of my idols growing up. And then she sort of retired from track. She had two kids. And I use quotation air quotes because she went and did Ironman and triathlons for a little while. After her kids were a little bit older, she came back and came onto the marathon scene. And so now she went to our last Olympics in the marathon. She had the Canadian record in the marathon at the age of 41. So she's 43. She just ran a 2:22:30, which was a huge PB for her, 82nd PB. She ran the Olympic standard again by over 4 minutes, and she was only 18 seconds off the Canadian record. So 43 years old. So when people are saying they're too old to get faster, there's always someone to prove them wrong.
I'm just getting warmed up.
There you go.
That's cool. That's great. And so segueing to courses of different speeds and Canadians.
And so, old people doing fast things.
Old people doing. We'll do that after. I was going to segue actually to High Rocks in Spain.
Yes.
So High Rocks in Spain. And we'll talk about the Canadian content after, but the big kind of headlines was Rich Ryan heading over to High Rocks in Spain. Backstory, Spanish courses have traditionally been fast in high rocks. Traditionally, especially, they've had very quick sled pushes and pulls. So Rich missing out on the Elite 15 last year, rightly or wrongly, put a lot of emphasis on the fact that the American courses were generally slower, which was true, and that he never got a chance to run one of the fast European courses, so that a lot of the European athletes or overseas athletes, whatever you want to say, got in because they were on fast courses. True, not true, who knows, whatever. I guess technically it is true. However, it doesn't mean they're not good. It just right. means they got a fast course. Like people who race that race in Berlin, that marathon, because their times are fast because it's a fast course. It doesn't mean they're not good. It just means they run a fast course.
Right. Yeah. But
unlike the Berlin Marathon, it's not as predictable with high rocks because sometimes it's a fast course, sometimes it's not. The layout of the course is different. Equipment's different. Everything can
change. The amount of people on the track when you're running.
That track was polluted.
It was.
With
yeah.
people. It was like watching salmon swimming back to a spawn. It was everywhere. And people have the worst lane discipline.
Etiquette. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, you're not that fast. Get out of the fast lane, especially on the straightaways. Mm-hmm. You know what? If you want to cut in on the corner, great. Cool. Yeah. Go ahead. You know, save you hit the apex of the corner. I get it. But you're not giving yourself an advantage going in the fast lane up the straightaway. Mm-hmm. Right. All you're doing is blocking people that would go faster. Yeah. And it's, I think Hyrox needs to reword how they describe that fast lane and just call it the passing lane. So you're only in that lane to pass. The rest of the time, you're on the outside. So,
yeah. Or why is Hyrox not running these elite heats first?
I got no idea.
Give him a clean course.
I would think if I was setting it up, I would send the elite men first. Right, probably three waves, something like that, maybe even just two, then send the elite women, then send, you know, maybe two, three waves of elite women, then the rest of the elite men, the rest of the elite women, and go through like that. I would just, that to me makes more sense. And even if you are still like, there's elite people in the course, it's they usually have better etiquette.
Yeah
So That makes sense to me. Anyway, so Rich went over there, didn't put in a bad race, but was not a fast course by, by all accounts and just by looking at the numbers, was not a fast course. Wasn't a horrible course. Just wasn't a super fast one. It was won by Jonathan Wynn, and I believe 58, 38, something along that lines, mid-58s. Which really would have only been good enough to land the 15th spot in the Elite 15. Rich ended up 101 something, closer to 102, 101.
Was he behind Austin?
He was behind Austin. Yeah.
Because Austin was 6107.
Yeah. So I think that Rich was like 61 high.
Okay.
So, which really for Rich is not a bad time, right? It's pretty consistent with his with most of his times. But anyway, the story being some of the Europeans had, and Jonathan Wynn was one of them. Sorry, Jonathan Wynn's not a European, he's an Australian, but was one of the ones who took some offense to some of Rich's comments. And it was interesting to see that, you know, Jonathan Wynn went out there and won that race. And I'm sure he's had something to say. And then Hunter post some stuff on social media as well, because Rich had said that Hunter's world record, which was set on a very fast course, which is true, you know, was kind of bogus because it was such a fast course. Anyway, Hunter kind of let him have it about that. So they are piling on Rich. So I personally am like of a scenario of, hey, he went over there, he gave it a shot. He didn't put in a bad race, but it wasn't his day. I don't really recall him saying anything bad about the other athletes, condemning them, but some of them have taken some of his comments that way. I remember him saying a lot about how the courses were fast, and not the same. I've done that too. But maybe I don't keep track of everything Rich says. So maybe I missed something or whatever. But anyway, It is what it is. Some people thought think he got his comeuppance, I guess. But my question is a couple things. One, because of the qualification system now, is his season over before it even got started? Because now Chicago's out. He can't run in the Chicago major.
Okay, and then what about Sweden?
Sweden? So if he was to go over during that one, no, he won't, because he needs to get, he doesn't have a qualifying time to make those. So he would have to,
oh, okay,
he would have to travel somewhere else. So the only, he'd have to travel overseas again to try to get a top 15 time somewhere else in order to run in Chicago or Sweden or any of the other majors. So if he wants to go to one of the majors, he has to travel overseas or try to get lucky on a fast American course, which we know is pretty slim indeed. Like, there's the fastest one I guess we've had was that one Dallas course, which he set his PR in, which wasn't fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
So his season is almost done before it started, or he's got to shell out some money and head overseas. And that, to me, that goes back to these majors should be open to all.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's so many high rocks now between now and December. Like, I think I saw there's almost one every weekend. So essentially then these ones don't matter for qualifying.
You can set a time to qualify for the US majors or to qualify for the major events. So that's what you can do at these ones. But yeah, the times now are so bloody fast.
Yeah.
And if you don't get a fast course, you're euchred. There's not much you can do about it. Like, I mean, if you don't, it's got to the point, I think now in order to get in the top 15 for men, you need like a 58.30.
Mm-hmm.
So you need a super fast course to do that. You could theoretically go to a lot of these courses, win, and not have not a qualifying time.
Yeah.
And it just seems strange to me. Like, I think these courses should be where you set your minimum, whatever, for men, say a 65, women, a 70, and that allows you to go in the open. And that way it keeps the importance of these other events, right? So that they still are relevant. Otherwise, maybe their attendance drops or whatever. So you either have to throw prize money on it or make something like that. So then your majors are not specifically opens, but they're just a random number to qualify for. And the number should be attainable by anyone who is a legit elite. And that's why I say 65 for men, 70 for women. You can hit those numbers, you're legit.
Mm-hmm.
And even on a bad course, a good athlete should be able to hit those numbers. Like, a good high rocks racer should be able to hit those numbers. Like, I know, like, if we take Tara, for example, if we put Tara on a crappy course, she's still going to go sub 70.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, I mean, that's just spitballing ideas, but that's why I think that would be so much better. And it's not specifically to do with Rich Ryan. He's just an example of it. There's other ones that are. But, so what do you think? Is it done before he starts, or does he keep going, or what?
Well, yeah, it kind of sounds like it. But, I mean, so now what? Like, he focuses on DECA?
I personally think that's what he should have been doing in the first place anyway. I think he's so much stronger at it when he's focused on it. And contrary to what some people say, and this is kind of what I wanted to talk about this later on with specificity, but I don't think if you want to be the best at either one, that you can focus on them both. And I think as time goes, that's going to get even more and more so that way. You know?
Yeah, I mean, it is getting more and more so because people are truly specializing. I mean, there's still people like your Meg and Lauren and Vivian, they're going to go out and they're going to smash it no matter what, like either one. But yeah, that we are just, people are getting so dialed in either one now.
But I look at it like what you said with like Meg and Lauren and those people, right? So Meg, use Meg and Lauren. They can go to High Rocks and smash it. They go to DECA and smash it and contend for the win on both, right?
Yeah.
But that's like, the really athletic kid in high school who's winning every sport and eventually gets to college and it's like, I can't win in every sport anymore. I have to do everything I can just pick one and be competitive.
Yeah.
And as the sport grows older and older and older and gets more experience and people from more participation from all around the world, other people are going to specialize, and that bar is going to keep getting raised higher and higher and higher. And in order to keep up, you're going to have to specialize. And I think it'll happen even within DECA with the different distances. And you are starting to see that separation now.
Yeah, like we get milers.
You're getting milers. You're getting dudes winning the strong now are not winning the mile. You get a few, like you get Ryan Kent, who's up there. He's like, okay, I could possibly win all three. Ryland Shadeg, possibly win all three.
Yeah.
But then you're getting guys like Bubbles, Ryan Corning, Matt Stankovic, all in the strong. And then you're getting guys like Dylan Scott, Rich, other guys like that who are not going to win in the strong, but are going to destroy in the fit. So it is starting to happen, and it'll just get more and more so.
Yeah. If hopefully, I mean, if DECA lasts.
It will last. I think it will. There's enough people doing it, and it keeps going more and more people. I mean, who knows about competitive with Spartan rolling around with it with the money and stuff like that, but that's another issue.
Mm.
Please, Spartan, fix that.
I know.
We've asked long enough. Just fix it. Just fix it, fix it, fix it.
I know.
Spend much money. Just give them their freaking money.
Give the people what they want.
Break out the credit card. Just
I know.
Pay them out. You know, I mean, I heard Kent and Meg talking on a podcast, and now they're both talking about going to Sweden. Right?
Yeah, and exactly. Like,
it's just a bad look. And I feel for Yancey because I don't think he has any control over it.
Well, I mean, I think DECA is paying Spartan's bills right now.
Yeah, I think to a certain extent. Their affiliate program is just doing amazing.
Yeah.
Like, and I mean, like how many events were last weekend? Like 50?
Like, yeah, something like 53 strongs.
Yeah, between strongs and miles. Yeah, last weekend. And it's, I was insane. That was a great weekend. Before we move on to that, Canadian content in Spain. Austin Azar setting a PR on a slow course, which is nothing but great sign.
And our fastest Canadian time for a male.
Fastest Canadian record. What was it?
61.07.
So almost into the 60s. I'm watching him and I'm like, he is killing stations. He just needs to get that run up a little bit.
Yeah.
And, you know, run up a little bit, get the wall balls down, and he'll be a sub 60 guy.
Yeah. Just top end speed, I think. But yeah.
And if this was a last year Spanish course, he probably would have been a 58.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he might have been a top 15 times. So he's good. And he just, and again, maybe a little more specificity in his training might.
Mm-hmm. Like, I know, well, I know he was focusing on high rocks.
He has been working on it, but he's been focusing on high rocks for what, like 4 months?
Yeah.
And a lot of these guys have been focusing on it for 4 years.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
So if he stays with it, and keeps going, he'll be a real force and contender. I think this, it's just that right type of grind for him.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, like I never think of Austin when I think of the fastest runners in OCR or hybrid or whatever, but as far as like a grueling grind, that is him to a T, you know? Yeah. So, and he always wears shorts that it's easy to pick him out. So I really appreciate that. He had like camo ones on. So that was cool.
Yeah.
And then Maria, and I'm not even going to attempt the last name. Was it Fisik?
Oh, no. F-L-E-C-I-K. Flesic.
Flesic. Okay, there you go. Mm-hmm. Like Fezzik. Thing from the Princess Bride? Fezzik. Good show, Princess
Is
Bride.
That a movie?
Bethany has a... Yeah, no. You would love it. It's very fairy tale-y. It's great. It's one of those movies every guy is ashamed to admit he likes. Right. So, yeah, she went over and she was second going into the lunges, putting on a great run, and then just, you know, bled out a bit and ended up, I think, in fifth place.
Yeah.
A little shy of her best. But her best is like 106 something Kazer and about, I think, 18th overall on the leaderboard, which is fantastic. And I imagine she will be able to get the roll down for Chicago and get into there, hopefully. So that'd be nice because that would be, I think, the first time we would have a Canadian compete in an Elite 15 race. So good on her. And then she did stick around later to be a part of Tiago Luce's team and set a record for the 4-person relay, which doesn't get a lot of attention. And I wish someone would do a stream of one, because I think much like the DECA relays, it would be very exciting to watch. Although 4 people, a little hard to keep track of.
Yeah. They have to wear matching outfits for sure. Mandatory.
Yes. Hyrox is good for that. And it's DECA too. teams are doing really well with the matching outfits. I love the matching outfits and the teams to pick them out. So, so great for them. And they as well are hosting an event with, I believe it's her and her husband. They have a gym in the GTA, and they're doing like a half rocks, which I don't know why it's taken so long for someone to finally do this. I saw another one's happening in Quebec, I think, as well.
Oh.
But yeah, so essentially it's like half of everything pretty much. So half the distance and half the reps, not exactly, but pretty close. And this event is really cool because they're putting it on for free with a sock donation, which I assume is going to a charity, which is really cool of them. And I think it'd be a lot of fun. So I would say check it out and get out there, but it's sold out. But go and watch anyway. And who knows, maybe we'll do a live stream of it. Maybe we'll get to see it. We'll bring it on for YouTube, for OFX YouTube, for at least, you know, maybe top men's wave, top women's wave kind of thing. We'll see. We'll figure it out. But I will be there. It'll be a lot of fun. Half rocks, which I'm asking forever. Even less would be better, but that's all right. And I will wear my super shoes. Actually, I might not.
You need enough running to make the super shoes worth it.
They're just comfortable for me. But I might not anyway, because they have the worst grip in the world.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it is terrible, terrible grip. And from my understanding, a lot of minor ultras, but apparently a lot of the brands are like that. They just have shit grip. So I might have to go with the other ultras, which are kind of a happy medium. The same ones that Chris Roglosky wears. What are those? Rivera 2. There you go. Recommended by Chris Roglosky for hire. And Ry Claxton, the art department. Or what was it? The damper, darling? The damper setting, darling. Yes. All right. So, yes. High Rocks. That was it. One other thing I wanted to talk about, too, and I was talking about the race specificity, and I guess it goes hand in hand. I did hear, and just another example, I heard VJ on Running Public talking about how he's making his transition over into hybrid space, and that's cool, and that's great. And he's talking about a lot of other things he wants to do with from a social media's perspective with OCR to help grow and everything. And that's fantastic. But then he was saying how he wants to really focus in on high rocks, and then he wants to focus in on deck. And then he says he also wants to set a personal PR for 5K. And I'm like, this is why he's not going to, and I'm not picking on VJ. I think VJ is an amazing athlete, but this is why he will not attain the goals he's talking about. Because while he's number one, you know, he's a little late to the dance, right? Other people have a good head start on him, and then he's still not narrowing it in. And I think while he's got that wide spread, he's not going to get to. He's not going to get.
So you said high rocks, and run a 5K PB,
and DECA.
Well, I mean, if you're training for DECA, focusing on a fast 5K is not a bad idea. But for someone like BJ, who's a smaller guy, and trying to run a fast 5K, we might be kind of working some opposite ends of the spectrum with.
Yeah, like, I mean, where he's already got the speed, I think he needs to work the power.
However, has BJ ever focused on a 5K? Maybe his 5K PB is soft. I don't really know.
Yeah, I think his 5K PB is 15-something.
Okay, so it's not that soft.
No.
If he's never really focused on it before, then that might make sense.
Yeah. So anyway, I just think again, it's too wide a target, you know?
But again, I think people in this space, though, see people doing all of it, and we just sometimes think, well, that's just what we all do. Like, you know, we can, and I mean, Chris Roglosky is the ultimate example. Like, not everybody can do all the things and do them all well. And I mean, so you see someone who can, and we just assume that as hybrid athletes, we should be able to run, you know, road PBs and then get faster at this and better at this and all at the same time. But it typically doesn't always work that way.
Yeah. And I think, again, if you're an age group or an open wave or even a low level running lower level elites, yeah, man, you can hit everything. You can do it all. But if you want to be the best,
right,
you can't. I don't think you
doing it all is so different than being the best at it all.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Like you I can go out there and I can run a high rocks. I can run a any length of DECA, and I can go do an RX1, and I can go jump in an OCR 5K or a 3K, and I can be competitive in my age group. But if I want to win, I need to dial in. And that's it's a different example because I'm not at that same level, but it still rings true for your goals. If you want to be the best at one, you got to dial in, I think.
Yeah.
And that's why I think until you see that, and I think that's one of the richest things he's missing too, is he's trying to do both. I think you can't, you got to be, I mean, that's why I'm picking Tara to win again this year, because Tara is dialed in.
She's dialing in.
She's dialed in. That said, good competition. Hopefully, if they go, they don't go to Sweden.
Right. Yeah.
So, that was my little bit about him. You want to talk about our weekend? All right, first off, the name.
There were so many names.
The name, your name.
For me. Oh, yeah.
So there were so many going through my head and completely inappropriate ones that I'm not even sure we should really say. So I went with a nice one. But here's the deal. So the forgiveness part, and this is me owning up. And the first thing after our team, our relay out of my mouth was, oh, I'm so sorry. Because things were going really well. Mm-hmm. We were putting in a good time. Everything was going well. Everything was moving along well. And then we got to the bike, and about 20 seconds into the bike, I just hit the wall.
So our plan is Dave does the whole bike, because Dave can do his 40-second bike, and it's all great, and I'm not that good on the bike. So Dave smashes the bike.
20 seconds in, I just died. I'm like died. And after hindsight, I should have just dropped down to 300 watts for 10 to 20 seconds and then hit it again and accepted it's not going to be a great bike today. But instead, I called for your help and got you on the bike, which, again, is not a problem normally, right? That's great teamwork. Beth was there and ready to go. Shocked, but there and ready to go. But I put my bike seat at an 8, which is actually quite high for someone of my height. And Beth is 7 inches shorter than me. So when she got on the bike, not only could she barely get on it, but the seat was stabbing her in the lower spine.
So Dave says, Beth, you got to jump on the bike. And I look at him, I'm like, how? So I can't get onto a seat height when it's at 8. Mm-hmm. My feet, I would just be like spinning my legs in open air. So I slide off of the seat forward and I'm trying to pedal while the handles are hitting my body and my knees are kind of in my chest and the seat is hitting my back and I'm still trying to do something. And I felt like, I said this to them before, but I felt like a child who stole their parents and I'm trying to get away with it.
And sadly nobody got any of this on video, which is horrible.
I know.
But I was like, okay. And then I got back on and finished. And then we went on and we did the dead ball, and the dead ball went pretty good, but it was a little off plan, but we still went okay with that when we got on the tank. And then that was ended up, you were doing more tank than me, which is backwards than what we normally do. And then on the last one, when you were pulling, I forgot to switch it to the women's setting. And so you were pulling the men's setting. So I screwed that up too.
Yeah. And everyone was screaming, it's on the men's. And it was just too late. I'm like, just forget about it. Dave's already taken a nap over here. I'll just pull the damn sled.
I didn't hear anything. I was just so, I think I was just so pissed off at myself that I was completely blocked out of everything else. And then all I could do after, and then I turned around and I saw what happened. I was like, son of a bitch. So then you get over, and I'm like, all I'm thinking in my head is like, she's going to be exhausted. You have to do as many burpees as you possibly can, as fast as you possibly can, to make up for all the stupid shit you've done here. And I did. I gave everything I could on those burpees. And I think that's the first time I've ever done more burpees than you on a team effort. But I was like, I was like, oh my God, that was so, so bad. Anyway, so, I mean, we were thinking of stuff like, what was it? It was like the seat sodomized sweetheart and, you know, the spinal tap sweetheart. There was a lot of different stuff going around. Seat in the back, Bethany. I don't know what else.
Yeah.
Back seat, Bethany.
Yeah, backseat bathroom.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
But a lot of great stuff going around, but we weren't sure if we should do that. But then we ended up saying it anyway, so who the hell cares? That said, your time still wasn't horrible.
It really wasn't that horrible. Like we still ran like a 40-second PB.
Yeah, we still have a 40-second PB. We are tied for 20. We'll probably get in on a roll down or maybe get the 20 spot.
Needless to say, we can go faster.
We can go faster, which is great. There's a lot of room for with improvement. There's a lot of room for improvement on that, but
Make a suggestion.
Hell no.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
Bethany on that bike again, adjust the seat for her.
yeah. I vow I will not put you on the bike again ever.
At
I'll just
least not like that.
not like that. Like I think like and again, like I said, hindsight, I should have just dropped to about 300 watts for
Yeah.
10 seconds, 15 seconds, and then I could have got out again. And what it felt to me, it just felt like honestly, I think I went over the limit on the ski erg and then didn't get enough time to rest because you put in a good farmer carry and that just wasn't enough time for me to recoup. I think I needed 10 more seconds and then I could have done a usual bike. But it is what it is. Live and learn. And it was still funny. But yeah, so that was my bad part of the day. But I did have a great part of the day. I got to do my opening run and I got to do a 43-second PR, which for me was great because I've been kind of hunting the sub 14 for a while. And I damn near managed to surpass the 13 and skip it altogether. So I got a 13:17. I'm like absolutely stoked about it. Thank you very much, Tara. Your training's been awesome. And I think as wrong as everything went in the relay, I don't think I could have done it much more right in the individual. I did everything right according to plan as I laid it out. A little more, I mean, more fitness near the end, definitely. There was still like a few, like, I mean, very minimal transitions all went well. I really, strategy was spot on and I managed to execute it spot on. I just, again, need to just get more cardio to finish it out, more time on the bike to get it even faster. And like I put in a 72-second bike was, and for me, my last one was an 85. So that is a 13-second improvement on the bike alone. And
Awesome.
most of my improvements all came back half. So that means it was, one, I did the front half well. It was still a faster front half, but I did it well, hit everything that I wanted, and then managed to have enough energy to increase the back half. So that was really good. I was very, very happy and had great cheering squad, lots of support. Rye calling out the times for me. That helped a lot. That's the first time we've ever done that. And it resonated for me. I liked that. It was good. Yeah. Lots of good cheering. Johnny Cross judging me again. You and Jeff there helping. Sue. Fantastic. So I was very excited. And the course setup, we were very, this was a different course setup for us, different layout. Ryan and I made it up and we thought it would be fast and it did prove to be fast. So I was really happy about that. All in all, great event. And so your day though, how did yours go in the beginning?
It's been a while since I've done a strong, actually, like months. And I've been feeling a lot better on the machines. So I like the strong is not my event really. Like I'll end up in an age group situation, but I just wanted to take a bit of a chance and take a couple seconds off my ergs and then see what I can do on the bike and just see if I can keep pushing after smashing the bike. And by smashing the bike, I mean smashing the bike for me. And just to kind of test it out. So I didn't destroy the ergs, but like three or four seconds faster on each one. And then the bike, I was probably 10 or 15 seconds faster than I've done before on the bike. The fastest bike I've ever done in the race, though. And then it was I thought I could recover on the ball over shoulders, but I was just fumbling the ball all over the place and like could not get into a rhythm. The world was kind of spinning a little bit after that. And my legs did not recover from that bike. And then I really felt it on the tank. Like that felt like the heaviest tank in the world to me. And we all know you can bleed time on the tank too. And I just could not get it moving. So I had probably the slowest tank I've ever had. Yeah, and then that was kind of it for me. So I was 13 seconds off of my personal best. So it's not, I didn't blow up, but I was hoping to take about 20 seconds off of that time, and get under 14. So yeah, again, it didn't work, but I kind of wanted to just try it and see how it went for me. Because I have been feeling better on the machine. So I think I just, again, that back half, it's probably just where I need to put in some work.
But you, like the fact that you did do a faster bike, that you were capable, before you weren't capable of doing a faster bike.
Right.
Which tells me now that, so you took off 15 seconds. If you had just taken off five.
Yeah.
Then you probably could have done all the rest of it even faster because you would have had even more energy than normal. But I think it's good that you did this because now you learned where that line is.
Right? Yeah, and that's kind of what I wanted to see again is like, can I do that? And I still don't think necessarily that I can't do that. I think I need to do that and then practice what comes after and still being capable of doing the things after. Or yeah, take it back a couple. And again, like we play around also with how hard to push the rower. And, you know, maybe the 3 seconds faster on the rower, like again, that like 3 to 5 seconds, it makes a difference sometimes later. So again, it's like kind of playing around with all of those things. Like the other stations are kind of what they are, but yeah, those ergs sometimes going a bit too hard too early can just really affect you in the last like 3 stations.
So what I did well on the individual and what I did poorly on the relay was actually the pivotal point for me. It really wasn't the bike. It was the ski erg. So, and this was part of my individual strategy was on the row. I pretty much went with a regular effort. I rode a 147, something around there. High 140s, right? Had a good lunge. Actually, I had one of my best lunges. I might have been my best lunge. And then about a 147-ish on the row, which is pretty par for the course for me. Good box, good sit-ups. And then on the ski, I took it back a bit. Whereas normally I'd be like a 155 on the ski, I did a 2, right? And that allowed me to do the 5 seconds I lost on the ski, I already made up on the farmer carry. And then I had more energy when I got on the bike and then everything else. And when I got on the bike, I had that energy. I didn't have to completely blow myself out. I ended up faster and then had more for the end too. So I think that that ski is really deceptive. Mm-hmm. And that's a spot where you're probably best to dial it back a bit, regain a little energy, because what's about to come is going to get really nasty.
Mm-hmm.
And so it seems to me, I think that really paid off was still training the ski, getting good on the ski, but being able to comfortably just back off a bit and then kind of ramp it up through that farmer carry, get on the bike, and then you can start to really hurt.
Yeah.
So I that's what I think, what I think worked really, really well for me. And that was probably the smartest move I did. And then, like I said, then I got in the relay and when we did the transition, you handed it back to me. I went ham.
Yeah.
You know, I was like 130 and I was just, and I remember the last 10 seconds going, all right, just now really hammer this part. And
oh yeah. Yeah.
Big mistake. So
yeah,
I think that's something you should play with is, back off on that ski and then see, because I know you made good grounds on all the machines, but on that one,
that's the one you want to lose time on.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That one, now you've made grounds on it. Instead of getting a faster one, drop back about 2 seconds compared to normal.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll just be that much fresher for the rest.
Yeah.
Just a thought, something to play with.
Yeah.
Just keep playing with it. And drop your damper settings to 1.
No, can't do it.
I'm not doing one either. But I'm going to publicly thank my wife who got my damper settings down and helped out. It did help out a lot. I was like rowing at a 10 and skiing at an 8. And this one I rode at a 5 and skied at a 4.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is far and away. I never even tried that until maybe 2-3 weeks ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
Till she made me do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So it worked. And, it's not fun. Great turnout. Some absolute monsters. Isaac Sanderson came in and did what was his time?
11:35.
Yeah, 11:35. I think I actually have it here. Let me see here. We'll look at it. Isaacs. Oh, that's teams. Individuals. Yeah, 11:43 for Isaac. Yeah, here we'll do the share screen dealy. And you can see it. But very quick times. There we go. Very quick times. Isaac Sanderson with an 11:43. Ashley Squire Smith with an 11:59. So two guys sub 12. My 13:17 got me third place. All right. Ryan Reed, again, he had put in another huge PR. I think he was like 15 minutes last time, just under 15 minutes this time, 13:41. Like some big PRs. Amber Tate, we talk a lot about her and Zach. They've been all over the place doing all over things. She had a day like yours where I think she tried some stuff and it didn't quite work out for her. And she still had a great time, but not quite a PR. But they've been like on the road for like 6 weeks competing all in a row. And I think that just shows you cannot maintain that pace forever. Right. So I was looking at what I thought was interesting was the first Farm Girl event they had that we had. I won with 15 minutes. That would have put me ninth. And that's a big difference.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this weekend was a pretty big deal for some people. This was the last weekend you could qualify. So, I mean, getting Isaac and Ashley out too. And even Amber, like, she wouldn't have come if this wasn't the last chance for her to try to drop a fast time. So, yeah, the weekend itself was kind of significant.
And then on the team side, Connor went and wrangled himself. I think he found a shaved gorilla in the zoo and knew how to ride a bike. And he brought him in. That dude, what did he do? A 17-second bike, I think?
So it was 19 seconds on the bike.
19 seconds. So, you know.
You have a chance, watch the Connor's reel of it, because the faces that are made behind him.
And Connor is fast, man. He's good. They putting in 8:58. So I think one of only about like three teams that have ever gone sub nine.
Yeah.
And just killed it. I mean, they were great. I think this Jamie Goodman was it might have been his first DECA event of any kind.
That was my understanding. Yeah.
And he just dropped the hammer, literally.
Oh yeah. Even watching him move the tank. Wow.
Yeah. You motion move the tank. He did exactly what Connor wanted him to do, and he did it well. So good for him. Yeah. That was great to see. A lot of fun. Good to have such a great time. And then Pat Millington and Zach, who we knew would be a great team too. Pat just always fantastic. And Zach is one of the prolific teammates in DECA. He just seemingly, no matter who he teams up with, he's going to put in a good time one way or another. Mm-hmm. And they did a 9:17. That said, I think they made a lot of mistakes and probably could have been sub-9 as well. Mm-hmm. You know, so that was good. And then just some other good teams too. I mean, Alex and Ryan, completely underrated, 10:16. I mean, that was awesome. Jacqueline and Emily, we see them at a lot of places. They did really well for the women, 12:44. And again, I think they made some mistakes and could do much better. They need to look at maybe their strategy again, but so many good fun teams and stuff. The relays are always just so awesome.
Yeah.
So always lots of fun. I'll go back to the screen here. It was all in all a great day. Corn on the cob and beers afterwards.
Yeah, it was a good time.
Dan and Jess put on a great event. I didn't even look. Dan put in his first time, and he went. I think he went like 18 something.
Yeah. His goal was sub-20, and he did.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think I had one of my highlights doing a lot of judging. I was with Brooke was her name. And she had done a 21 previously. And I said, we're going for a PR today, right? And she's like, yeah. And I said, okay, what was your time? And she said, 21. I said, well, we're doing an 18. And she just kind of looked at me like, okay. She got 18:30. And I mean, she just, when you get stuff like that and people just, it just is so much fun.
Yeah.
So great.
Yeah. I love it. I love judging too.
Yes. Yeah. It's, I don't know. It makes it worthwhile. Yeah, wow. You know what? That was longer than I expected. I had other stuff, but we save it because we don't want to go too long. But yeah, so There is another deck event this weekend coming up at Resilience. It's a deck a mile. So even though you may have a bit of a hangover from the big weekend that was, go out there, get your time in for next year, get a good run, and we'll be there. And actually, it's going to probably be a really fast course.
Yeah.
Because it is in a facility big enough, you can run inside in a big loop. Mm-hmm. And I think it'll be a really quick course. So I'm going to be there. We're going to have some fun.
So, and then in 3 weeks, we're hosting again.
And I will be there. We're going to have a lot of fun. So that'll be a really good one, too. And we're back to that same facility.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep.
We're doing a mile and a strong.
All right. So 2 day?
1 day.
1 day. 1 day, mile and strong.
Yeah.
All right. Teams and individuals.
Yep. And juniors.
And juniors. Yes. You get good juniors.
Yeah.
We're going to get more of those. Like the school's involved in that stuff.
Yeah.
That said, if you ever use an 11-pound ram, there's actually difficulty on the burpees because it's so narrow to get your chest down to it.
Don't bother me now.
Yeah.
All right. All right. So Tara and I were talking about this too. I just want to put this in. So if you and I ran a mile against each other, all right, you're going to win. If we use the women's weights, if I use the women's weights, I think you're still going to win. But if we use the men's, I think I can get you.
Yeah. I do want to do some sims with the men's weights, though. So we'll see.
All right, I'll do sims with the women's. I think, you know what? I think it would, the difference in, I don't think that the farmer carry, I think, oh yeah, that's, it's heavy. That farmer carry is heavy.
It's heavy.
And it's not a strong point of yours, the farmer carry. It's not usually
no,
your.
No, it's not. No.
Yeah. We know you can pull the tank on the men's weight. That's fine.
If I have to.
But yeah, it's a big difference. I notice it so much on, wow, yeah, both the burpees and the lunges. You probably notice it more on the burpees. Just because you're more tired.
Yeah, I think I'd have to do a little bit of a clean and press.
Yeah, just because you're more tired when you get there too, right?
Yeah.
Like you get your strong legs and everything. So I think like with the 55-pound run, yeah, you're going to notice. Yeah, it's going to slow you down.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's going to mess with your rhythm too much.
No.
Whereas I think that 44-pound ram would, like you say, you might have change your style. But it would be interesting. It'd be interesting to try one day.
Yeah, it would.
Mm-hmm. But, all right, cool. Beth, that's it. I'm done.
Yeah, me too.
All right.
That was enough talking today.
Yeah. Thanks everybody, and we'll catch you next week and hopefully see you at some events real soon. Keep listening. We appreciate it. Take care.